In my 40-year history of broadcasting, I have never endorsed a weight loss product because most don't deliver until now. Science behind CaloCurb is so compelling that I can support it as a plausible alternative for curbing appetite and enhancing satiety to help you shed pounds. The active ingredient in CaloCurb, Amerisate, comes from a specific New Zealand-grown hops flower, which works by activating your body's own appetite-regulating chemical messengers, including GLP-1, which signals specific areas of the brain to effectively manage hunger in just 1 hour. CaloCurb is clinically proven to reduce hunger by 30%, cravings by 40%, and calorie intake by an average of 18%. CaloCurb is a safe, effective, and affordable natural appetite-suppressing supplement made in the United States with no chemicals, synthetics, or caffeine, and it doesn't cause jitters. Take control of your eating habits and cravings naturally with CaloCurb. For more information and order, just go to CaloCurb.com. That's CaloCurb.com. Use coupon code DH10 for 10% off. That's CaloCurb.com. Coupon code DH10 for CaloCurb. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. One of the reasons that I do this podcast is to learn about nutritional supplements. And I have a great fascination for the latest, greatest innovations in nutritional supplements. And I presume that also motivates you to listen to Intelligent Medicine, because we have cutting-edge information about what's coming around the bend in terms of supplement trends. Today, we're going to take a look at a supplement that perhaps some of you haven't heard of. It's Anatto GG, and we'll explain what that means with a couple of experts. One of our guests is a frequent contributor. He's Dr. David Brady. He's talked to us about a variety of things over the years here on Intelligent Medicine, I believe most recently about his book, The Fibro Fix, which is a wonderful book on fibromyalgia. Dr. David Brady is kind of a renaissance man in this field. He's a well-respected communicator, integrative practitioner, naturopathic physician, and also he was longtime vice president for health sciences and director of the Human Nutrition Institute, a very prestigious place of learning at the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut. And he also maintains a private practice. He is chief medical officer for Designs for Health, which is a wonderful supplement company that make professional quality supplements. And also, he is in the testing realm, Diagnostic Solutions Labs, with very innovative functional medicine tests. Our second guest is Dr. Barry Tan. Dr. Tan is a PhD in chemistry and biochemistry. He's committed himself to the research and development of phytonutrients with specific applications to health conditions. He is an innovator in developing something called Delta Gold. It's the first ever tocopherol-free tocotrienol product that's extracted from Anatto. And it's claimed this is the most potent form of vitamin E in existence today. So without further ado, let's introduce our guests, Dr. Brady and Dr. Tan. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. It's good to be back on the podcast, and it's great to be here not only with you, but with my long-term colleague and friend and very respected colleague, I might add, Dr. Barry Tan. So I'll try to do my best to keep up with Barry and from the clinician's perspective on how we utilize some of these things with patients and our thoughts about how we formulate with some of these wonderful ingredients as we make products at Designs for Health. But Barry is really the detail guy. He's the PhD in biochemistry, and he knows this stuff at a level that I can only hope to. So hopefully between him and I, we'll be able to instruct your listeners a little bit on this new supplement called GG, or geraniol for if you really want to say it out, you can see why we call it GG. It's very new in the nutritional space, but it's amazing that it hasn't been around before, but there are some technical reasons why it hasn't, which Barry can explain. But we really think it's transformational, and it can be a natural agent that really has the ability to move the dial in a lot of different ways in a lot of different applications that we find to be common ones in functional and integrative medicine.
Well, wow. Let me start by, you know, before we get to Dr. Tan, because I want to get do a deep dive on the biochemistry, since we have a PhD in the house. That is a useful thing, because that's a course that I kind of hung on with by my fingernails to. The bloom is off the rose a little bit on vitamin E, according to supplement figures. So, you know, some supplements, their sales are soaring. You know, nutraceuticals that help with immunity, they're up by double-digit percentages, sometimes triple-digit percentages, and vitamin D is through the roof in terms of sales. But sales are lagging on conventional vitamin E. It's a tocopherol. There's various forms of vitamin E. Some of them are the sort of so-called dry vitamin E, there's synthetic vitamin E, and then there's mixed tocopherols, and people seem to believe that these are more holistic or more comprehensive in their efficacy. But there have been some disappointing studies on vitamin E, I think we have to admit. So is this a potential successor to vitamin E in that space of, as an antioxidant and as an immune enhancer?
You mean this is for the tocotrienol? Yes, there was the development of vitamin E came because of alpha tocopherol, and that's how alpha tocopherol became a vitamin, because they found that it's required for the fetus to come to full term. That was alpha tocopherol. I think it was incidental that happened to be for alpha tocopherol at the beginning, but because it did, then it became a vitamin. So in the ensuing 50, 70 years, a lot of studies were done on alpha tocopherol, natural, synthetic, the whole ball of wax. And then tocotrienol came, discovered like almost 40, 50 years after tocopherol. It was almost not to be. And it was first discovered even as a tocopherol. And they found out that there is clear distinction because of the tail. So therefore, in the 1990s, see, it's long time from the 1920s, and that's when people study tocotrienol, right at the time when a lot of clinical trials for alpha tocopherols were done. Now, if you look at the last 30 years, there's still some tocopherol studies, but it really did not pan out. And yes, you were right that alpha tocopherol even can increase all-cause mortality and a few cancers that are out there. With tocotrienol, they've seen the opposite. And we have about half a dozen or more clinical trials in Denmark on tocotrienol in cancer, for example. But mostly for us, we use the tocotrienol because it's tocopherol-free on other chronic conditions besides cancer, even though we are doing some cancer studies. And for the ones that we consistently see results with the tocotrienol on chronic conditions were on hypercholesterolemia, particularly dyslipidemia, we started with that. And then we graduated it to pre-diabetes. We saw the modulating of the sugar level. And then we started working on diabetics with clearly above normal sugar. And then now, and after this, I think I'm going to cool down on tocotrienol clinical trials. There's so many you can do. So we're doing the third of our fatty liver trial on tocotrienol, all chronic condition. However, in Texas, however, we are doing a study on people with obesity, obese people taking tocotrienol. So that's the part. These are some examples of chronic conditions. We do not see that tocopherol contribute, but tocotrienols do. So
backing up just a little bit, I seem to recall that there are 8 different compounds or molecules under the rubric of vitamin E. There's the tocopherols, I think there are 4 of them, and then there are 4 tocotrienols, right? And there's alpha, delta, gamma, is there a beta?
Yeah, a beta, yes. Yeah.
And each, so there's a corresponding Greek letter for each of the 4, right? Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, you're correct. Yes. And the way that they differentiate that is based on the substitution. That means the meso substitution on the ring. So depending on the substitution, they are there for designated label alpha, beta, delta, gamma for the tocopherol series. And then the same for the alpha, beta, delta, gamma for the tocotrienol series. Then the distinction of the tocotrienol and the tocopherol is just the tail. It has a head and a tail structure. In that of a tocopherol is saturated. The whole tail is saturated about 15, 16 carbon, totally saturated. And then that of the tail of a tocotrienol is unsaturated. And it had three double bonds, hence it's called triene. Three double bonds on the tail. That's it. That's the only difference between the tocopherol and tocotrienol.
Just a little bit of a molecular tweak that differentiates them. David, you know, you and I have been through the vitamin E wars, and, you know, we may have started with, alpha tocopherol, or we may have started with even the tocopherol acetate, which is the so-called dry form of vitamin E, you know, decades ago. That was popular and used in many of the studies, some of the, which came up short. And then it evolved that, you know, everybody was supposed to take mixed tocopherols. That was popular. And then you were supposed to, then there was a whole thing on delta tocopherol. And now, are we evolving towards more prioritizing the tocotrienols and more specifically the GG, which is the kind of the primo tocotrienol? Is that a fair assessment?
Well, it's interesting, Dr. Hoffman. You see this story kind of told or unfold in a multitude of ways in nutrition, right? And we've seen similar things with folic acid versus different types of folate, right? Or different types of vitamin K and so forth. These things that occur in nature often occur in a multitude of different forms. And when we derive them from food and in the, you know, quote unquote, normal way, we're getting a blend of these different forms of a similar structure or similar nutrient. And when man takes it, you know, oftentimes out of reductionism, they're finding the one fraction of it that they thought was the only one, or that they thought was the most impactful one. And, you know, the old adage, more is better, but that's not always true, right?
And they synthesize it, they make it in big batches, synthetically, exactly. In a chemical factory.
And alpha, that's the case with alpha tocopherol. It got the early research, it was the first discovered. So they found a way to cheaply, large conglomerate found a way to cheaply make it. So that
I think Kodak did that. Was it not Kodak that first did that?
BASF,
big chemical company in Europe. Yeah, in Germany.
But it's interesting, like you said, there's actually eight different fractions. And to just take one fraction and take it at a very, very high level exogenously can actually create problems. It can create imbalances in what should be there in normal physiology and normal intake. And I think that was a big part of the reason why you see some negative outcome studies when you look over long periods of time with levels of alpha tocopherol intake and certain, like Barry said, all-cause mortality. It's because if you're taking so much of one fraction, you're kind of depleting or pushing out others, for lack of a better way of saying that. It just imbalances everything. You went through that progression. Great. You know, you had mixed tocopherols, but what were mixed tocopherols were not all the vitamin E's either, because it didn't have tocotrienol, right? So, and then delta tocopherol is just one fraction of, it's just not alpha, but it's delta, but it's just one fraction. So, you know, a full blend is what you're getting in various foods and so forth. But and correct me if I'm wrong, Barry, but we don't see the downside of monotherapy with something like delta tocotrienols, and particularly when we're using it in a targeted way therapeutically. There's been really impressive trials, as Barry said, cancer, particularly ovarian cancer, extending lifespan when combined with normal typical therapies, and many other things. Delta tocotrienols is a pretty amazing substance, NAFLD and liver disease and many others. But as you said, you know, that Barry was instrumental in bringing this awareness of tocotrienol, particularly delta tocotrienol, which seems to be the most impactful tocotrienol, in his, you know, quest, and through his career, he found the annatto plants kind of fortuitously and not targetedly. And Barry can talk about that, but, and out of this annatto plant, this South American plant that we know most in the U.S. and it's used for the orange food coloring, like on Doritos and things like that. But it has some amazing, you know, nutrient properties to it. And these tocotrienols are one aspect, but there's another molecule in there known as GG. And this is not a vitamin E. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different kind of compound. And that's another just amazing thing that come out of the same plant. So Barry, do you maybe want to elaborate on that or correct anything where I misspoke?
Yeah. David's doing a good job in it. Before I jump into the GG thing, let me add a specific comment about because of the potency and hence possibly also the toxicity of alpha-tocopherols. Of the 8 molecules of vitamin E, only alpha-tocopherol has a transport protein. And when I say that, I simply mean that it is a chaperone. Most things in our body, they just don't go to passive diffusion. A lot of food does, but most specific vitamin, they have specific protein that ensure that it goes the way it is supposed to. Like retinol, it can't just go to the eye automatically. It can go to other parts of the body, but it goes to the eye because it has a retinol-bound protein. And all the people that discovered this bound protein, they invariably, all of them get Nobel Prizes. So they are known like this. For the vitamin E, the only bound protein known is alpha-tocopherol bound protein. Therefore, when somebody takes alpha-tocopherol, the body conserves it. That itself sounds good. The way it sounds bad is when you take 1,000 IU of alpha-tocopherol, the tocopherol ain't going away. It just stays there infinitely. So the hoarding of that is huge. That is not same as if you take it just goes to your body. This is an ensured protein evolutionary design to capture alpha-tocopherol and it stay there. So with the huge usage, toxicity happened and hence some of this negative study. The other tocopherols and the other tocotrienol, they do not have such. And with all the clinical trials, we have not been able to find or sustain any adverse effects of tocotrienol. So that part is important like that. You may have to use more, but it's not conserved like alpha-tocopherol. So that's
an important point, yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you how I can segue to the GG side. So when I first, my original chemical study was on carotenoid. I heard about astaxanthin and lutein and zeaxanthin 40 years ago. It is not during the time when people were selling nutritional stuff. It's unknown. And in 1994, I heard in my mind and ophthalmologist in Harvard, she said that on the retina of the eye, flanking out from the fovea, are lutein and zeaxanthin. It was 1994 then. This is before people start to do that. And as a young chemist, and I thought, I heard that if you can get this giant marigold petal from South America, then you get all the lutein. I actually was determined to figure out a way to extract it from the petal like that. I'm glad that never happened. If it did, I'm dead in the water because many people But actually, that was my real reason. So I went to South America. Then fate has it. Literally 30 feet away from me, I saw a plant, this annatto plant, the pot open and where the flesh is, a botanist called the flesh a misoka. And it is the only fruit that I know, I am open to no other ones, that it has no flesh. Every fruit that you think to eat, always you eat the flesh, occasionally the seed, but where the flesh is air. When you see the open part of this beautiful, is air. So and then it had this a bixin, which is a carotene. Remember, my expertise was in carotene. I went to look for lutein and zeaxanthin, and then I got distracted. But I knew from my understanding of carotene in nature, they are always bound. They are very unstable. You know, in our industry, we consider that omega-3 is most unstable. It isn't. Chemically, a conjugated double bond are most unstable, meaning lutein, zeaxanthin, lycopene, these things. So they have to be contained well, otherwise they're not going to be stable. When you do Italian sauce, you notice that you have to cook it hard with oil, then you can see the oil turning it, because the lutein and beta carotene, they're in the cytoplast of the tomato and the cytoplast of the carrot. That's why they are contained. So they are individually, molecularly conserved in the cell. That's why they stay good. So having said this, even if you're in New England, they are yucky green and blue color, crustacean. The moment you cook them, the protein, they deprotonate, and then you see the astaxanthin. So that should tell us
a lot. Turn bright red, lots of red.
That's astaxanthin. So when you, so then you know that they are supposed to be protected. All this to say, it is not protected like that with annatto. If you touch it, it stains your hand, and that's why the British nicknamed this the lipstick plant, because it's stained. So I just thought, oh, if it is not encapsulated, I was just hypothesizing. There must be a powerful antioxidant that protect the bixin from degradation, because the stunning red color stays. And like that, I was expecting it to be a polyphenol. I really thought it was a polyphenol. And then I already, I'm taking a recess from tocotrienol to go back to the carotenoid thing. And shockingly, when I look, it is only vitamin E that protects it, and no tocopherol, and the most potent of the antioxidant among the vitamin E. I said, whoa, I already was in tocotrienol for a long time. I was taking a recess to go on the carotenoid thing. Anyway, with that, then I systematically, now I'm segue away from this tocotrienol thing. I removed the color. I was able to find the tocotrienol. But as I was doing that, I still see some little light yellow color thing. I didn't know what it was. So I analyzed it. And then I said, oh, this is a compound. It's a hydrocarbon compound with an alcohol. Hey, this is geranol. Then I said, wait, why is there geranol in my broth here of the annatto? Then I found out, I went to look in the literature as a botanist. So I'm kind of strange in that way. You know, most people who care about the human frame look at animal study, but I jump all over. Probably that's why I'm so slow in doing things. I'm a botanical physiologist also. I study how plant mix like that. So when I did, then I found out that the entire molecule of GG, geranol, is in tocotrienol. So the plant used GG to synthesize tocotrienol. And by the way, the plant used GG to synthesize tocopherol. Then I said, whoa, wait a minute. This is very interesting. The plant do this. And then many things. As long as they're small molecules from plant that you know about, it probably come from a GG. Now, then on the animal side, right? And the most famous one is probably the plant used GG for the synthesis of carotenoid. All the carotene you know come from GG. That should be a showstopper.
So it's a precursor molecule for a variety of things.
Yes. But then I thought, oh, then what about GG in animal? So that's a very big, then most time the plant and the animal don't do the same. GG, this one I'm saying about the forebearer. GG is the last common step between a plant and animal. They are very different genuses like that, like this. And then in the animal, I'm making a big jump to the animal now, which then come to what is GG? GG is a building block, a nutrient in a body, in the sense that it is like sugar for making carbohydrate. It is like amino acid for the making of protein. And GG is the building block for making small molecules in our body. That's it. So now when I say this, such as what, you're going to want to find out what molecule. Small molecule is a term that the pharmaceutical company come up with, a molecular weight of 1,000 or less. A vaccine that we're having for COVID is about 50,000. See, they're not small molecule. Insulin would be a small molecule, 5,000, like this. So a small molecule would be CoQ10, 800. and vitamin K2 and K4 about 500 days. Why do I mention CoQ10 and MK4? CoQ10 and MK4 irreversibly require GG for its synthesis in the human body. That
so let me jump in here, Barry, if you don't mind.
Okay, just to bring
it to some level of functional application as a clinician, as a doctor who uses this. Geraniol, which we call GG, just easier. And Barry found it in the Anano plant, came up with a way to actually viably extract it and make it available. This is a really pivotal molecule that sits in the center of what's called isoprenoid chemistry. And because of that, and as Barry said, it's sort of a precursor kind of building block compound that plants and animals use to make more complicated things. So GG is used for protein synthesis and protein modification, cellular growth and differentiation, the synthesis of CoQ10, of vitamin K, various prenylated proteins. So it has so many applications, it's hard to even list them all. But we know from the literature and from the biochemistry that it can help your body make more CoQ10 naturally, endogenously. It can prevent and reverse sarcopenia or the loss of muscle mass, particularly as you age or as in association with chronic diseases like cancer, like cachexia of cancer. It can help maintain healthy bone density as it has a role in the endogenous synthesis of vitamin K2 and the conversion of K1 to K2. It's been shown in various studies to improve metabolic health in a lot of ways that impact metabolic syndrome or type 2 diabetes, obesity. There are some studies suggesting it's anti-nociceptive, which means it can help reduce pain in chronic pain conditions. It has some applications in skin health with acne, psoriasis, aging skin. But we're also finding that it has a role in increasing androgen production, such as testosterone. So we've struggled for a long time to actually find a viable, natural therapy that actually is good at functionally increasing your own testosterone production. So you don't get, like when you take exogenous testosterone, you can get testicular atrophy, and there's other problems with doing that which have to be managed. And that's a harder, like kind of sledgehammer therapy, where something like GG can more functionally increase androgens and testosterone in males to help sex drive, you know, or libido and erectile dysfunction and many other things. So that being said, one of the most common drugs used in the Western world are statin drugs to lower cholesterol. And everyone knows that if you take a statin at this point, almost you should take CoQ10, right? Because statins affect the higher order enzyme in isoprenoid biochemistry known as the HMG-CoA reductase enzyme. And it depletes the production of everything below that. Only one of those things is cholesterol. Another is CoQ10. So it is true that if you block cholesterol production with a statin, you block production of CoQ10. But that's not the end of the story. There's a lot of other isoprenoid products that are blocked when you take a statin. Everything from prenylated proteins to vitamin K.
Steroids and so on.
Yeah, steroid production, many, many things. So,
Dr. Brady, can we pause on that note? Because it sounds sure. Like, you know, from what you and Dr. Tan have described, you know, we've really come up with sort of a Swiss Army knife type nutrient.
Yeah.
What the name, the scientific name for CoQ10 is ubiquinone, which is, comes from the word ubiquitous, but it sounds like this is even more ubiquitous in its applications.
Yep.
When we return in part two, we're going to talk about the role that GG might play. That's short for, I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. You guys are better at pronouncing it.
Geraniol.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Geraniol. Oh, that's not so hard. Okay, the product exclusively available to you, I believe, through Designs for Health. Designs for Health has a website. Check it out. And when we return, some of the remarkable applications of GG, especially when teamed with tocotrienols, which is right in Dr. Tan's wheelhouse. He's a tocotrienol expert and biochemistry maven. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.